People often ask, is the music more important than the drama? It's difficult to answer because they can hardly be separated. The music comes out of the drama. It's the music that the composer feels goes with that action and those situations and those characters. It's much the same in poetic drama. In Shakespeare, the poetry comes out of the drama. Opera can be thought of as heightened emotion, the emotion in the text heightened by the music. So the singer can't ignore the drama if the job's going to be done properly. Ideally, singing and acting are inseparable, and both are equally important as the singer prepares a role.
I am soaked in whatever I happen to be learning at the moment. It overwhelms all my conscious moments. It's not necessarily the actual time of sitting down and photographing the page in my mind, the words and the music. I usually play as well as I can on the piano the piece of music in question and get to know the sounds. I have the sounds in my head, and then I learn the words and I memorize it, and then it becomes part of me. It's there in all my waking moments and probably my sleeping ones as well, until it becomes part of me in a most peculiar way. Until it is that way, I can't perform it.
To Dame Janet Baker, the person she was playing on stage, such as Donizetti's Mary Stuart, which we opened the programme with, was always important. There are real emotions to be portrayed, the emotions of a particular person in particular situations and relationships, which, as she says, she came to through both words and music.
And especially with an operatic role, I can't get the person out of my head. I can't get the situation out of my head. It stays with me all the time. I'm absolutely brainwashed by it.
Janet Baker as Mary Stuart, confronting the Queen Elizabeth of Rosalind Plowright. Not, by the way, quite the Mary Queen of Scots of history. In Donizetti's opera, she is a wronged heroine of infinite nobility at the mercy of a villainous and scheming Queen Elizabeth. And in real life, by the way, the two women never actually met. That English National Opera performance, in English translation, has been recorded on video, so you can see, as well as hear, that Janet Baker and Rosalind Plowright are not just singing notes, they're acting as well. In this programme, it's the dramatic side of operatic performance that we'll be talking about. First, the sheer mechanics of operatic acting. An actor from the Straight Theatre once said that the main thing in acting was simply not to bump into the furniture. And quite seriously, this is a very important part of it. But the audience mustn't see the calculation, otherwise the illusion is destroyed. So how do you stay in character without bumping into the furniture?
This is what professionalism means. A professional singer does the watching of the conductor out of the corner of the eye, the relationships between other people on the stage, the brain's ticking over doing its job, all the part of one's personality concerned in the mechanics are working subconsciously as they ought to do. If one is a real professional, this is what it means. This is what one training is for. So that the technical habits are so ingrained by the time one comes to perform that you do them without thinking.
The singer has a number of problems which the actor in the Straight Theatre doesn't have. There's much less leeway for the opera singer, especially as regards pacing performance. Movement and gesture have to be timed to match the musical phrases. Ideally, the relationship should be a kind of choreography, as close as in ballet. So this is a second aspect of operatic acting, timing. John Cox has directed many plays in the Straight Theatre, though less nowadays, as he's general administrator of Scottish Opera. And he explained to us that in opera, everyone has to work within much stricter confines.
The principal difference is that a lot of the directing has already been done by the composer. And if you approach the thing with too free or arrogant or egotistical a will, it's the composer you're up against. And he's got all the cards, actually. So it's quite foolish to take him on. He'll win in the end. Directing for the theatre, for drama, of course, I always had control of pace, I had control of dynamic, I had control of pauses, I had control of colour, I had control of many, many things besides the simple matter of interpretation.
To take just one example of the sort of thing John Cox was talking about, in Mozart's Marriage of Figaro, there's a moment when two characters are scampering back and forth across the room. One of them's got to get out, and they know they're locked in. And they're up on the first floor. So they rush to the balcony. And heaven forfend that they arrive there before or after. The music says they should. And then one of them has to jump. Again, right on cue. Lucia Popp and Frederica von Stade in Mozart's Marriage of Figaro. Acting in opera is often criticised, and often rightly. There can be too many of those wildly semaphored gestures, arms sawing the air, part of the conventional caricature of the opera singer. But actually, in many operas, you don't get that kind of acting. You certainly don't get it in The Marriage of Figaro, for example. Certainly not in a good performance. Much of the music wouldn't accommodate it. But on the other hand, some operas do call for broad gesture. Not arms sawing the air wildly, vaguely, but broad nonetheless. A singer can't peck her way daintily through music like, well, this, for example. In the last scene of Goethe Dämmerung, the fourth and final opera in Wagner's Ring cycle, Brunhilde is about to ignite the funeral pyre on which her lover's body lies and to mount her horse and ride into the flames herself. Birgit Nilsson as Wagner's Brunhilde, about to ride into the flames. Only the grandest voice and real breadth in acting can match music like that. Broad gesture is fine in opera, so long as it's the right opera, so long as it matches the music and means something. But there is yet another aspect of operatic acting, and this is perhaps the most important of all, acting with the voice. Now, this is partly the way words are used.
Io tenni la promessa.
Non ancora. Voglio un salvo condotto onde fuggir dallo stato con lui.
Partir dunque volete.
Sì, per sempre.
Si adempia il volo.
Maria Callas as Puccini's Tosca, bargaining with the police chief, Scarpia, for her lover's life. Tito Gobbi was the Scarpia. But singers don't always take that kind of trouble with words. Sometimes, even, they'd rather forget about them and concentrate on producing beautiful sound, especially when there's a long, smooth line to spin out. And it's understandable, because they know that what the audience is going to admire most in this kind of singing is beauty of tone and breath control. But as Hilda Biel, Covent Garden's German language coach, insists, words are important here too.
If you sing a very long legato line and you don't articulate and you forget what you're singing about, it becomes very boring to the audience in the long run, and they fall asleep, because you can only listen to so much beautiful singing in one go, and then it becomes repetitive, it becomes boring. But you can listen to interesting drama for much longer.
Beautiful sound, but scrupulous attention to the words as well, from Hans Hotter in Wagner's Meistersinger. Or listen to Caruso in Pagliacci, as Canio at last facing up to his wife's infidelity. Caruso in Pagliacci. Sometimes beautiful singing is actually not what's called for. This was a point often made in interviews by Maria Callas.
It is not singing serving the purpose of vocal beauty. Sometimes the composer himself wrote that he did not want beautiful notes. He wanted suffocated notes. He wanted strident notes.
Callas as Ponchielli's La Gioconda contemplating suicide. In opera, varying the colour of the voice is as important as the use of words. It can mean that for different operas, a singer might be producing virtually different voices.
Each opera I do has a different quality of sound to it. That is not frequently understood, because even the highest critic can imagine that, no, I heard her the other day and it was a sweeter quality. Today it's not. It's a rounder or maybe a harsh quality, without realizing that we go to all that trouble to make that quality, because it should be that kind of quality for that particular part or phrase or things like that.
As Callas said, she wouldn't think of singing everything the way she sang La Gioconda. The way she sang would depend on the particular character in the particular situation. What are the characters' feelings? How does the music express them? She sings quite differently in something like this.
Thank you.
colors, varying her voice and using quite a different color for Verdi's La Traviata. This is how the great singing actors have always worked. It's not just a matter of instinct.
The voice you have to be able to master. The voice cannot master you. You have to be able to master. And you have to be able to, really, like a painter, combine all your colors at the palette and being able to sing as lyric or as dramatic as the moment requires.
Placido Domingo. While a different quality of voice, lyric or dramatic, might be needed for different roles, in any one opera, a singer has to stay in vocal character, even though there might be a great variety of situations calling for many different emotions. And a major operatic character, like Otello, say, might develop considerably in the course of the evening. And as Domingo pointed out when he talked to Daniel Snowman, you need as much control to stay within character as you do to vary it.
It's not only one opera or the other. It's in the same opera how many moments there are of tremendous lyricists and how many others that are very, very dramatic.
An opera like Otello has almost everything in it for you.
Sure. You have moments where Verdi wrote 4 and 5 pieces, pianissimo. So you really have to sing piano. But the color of the voice has to be dark in Otello. You see? It doesn't matter. What are you singing? Piano or fortissimo? The color has to be dark. If you don't have a darkest quality in your voice, you cannot sing Otello.
Here is Domingo in 2 moments from Verdi's Otello. Same character, but in very different situations. First, the love duet at the end of Act 1. Domingo as Otello with Renato Scotto. But listen to him in a later scene. Domingo as Otello, this time in Act 3, half mad with jealousy. Lyrical in the first excerpt, dramatic in the second, but in both a darker quality of tone than in many of his other roles. In the past, there was probably much more out front singing. There might have been acting as well, but it would have been much more acting on its own, with less concern for ensemble and the effectiveness of the whole opera. It was much the same as in the straight theatre, in the stock companies which flourished in the provinces, in Britain and elsewhere, right through to the end of the last century. The visiting star, an Edmund Kean maybe, or a Macready, would arrive to perform his celebrated roles. The limelight was his, and the main job of the supporting actors from the resident company was to feed him his cues, not get in his way, and above all, not get into his limelight, which he had no intention of sharing. Things began to change in the opera house, partly because of the growing importance of the conductor, particularly Toscanini and Mahler at the beginning of this century. Because orchestral writing was becoming much denser and more complex, especially in Wagner. And with the conductor a major force, and more recently the producer or director, great stars have had to become more conscious of their place in an ensemble. But even so, as international-based Robert Lloyd explains, there can be problems.
There's almost a choice that you have to make between whether you want an opera extremely well sung or whether you want an opera extremely well played. Because the better the singers, the more likely they are to slip into this circuit, international circuit, where they go into established productions and do their own thing. Now, it's very comfortable for them to do that, because they can fly into a city the night before, they sing their thing, take their money and go home. And they can earn a lot of money that way. On the other hand, if you're going to have the thing well played, all the subtle details that you can get out of a situation truly exploited, then you must have an ensemble situation, and you won't get the great singers to come into that, because they will have to rehearse for a long time, and during that rehearsal period they will lose a lot of potential earnings. And that's a very serious dilemma for an opera house, to know quite how to handle that.
Robert Lloyd. It's resident companies with local singers, as against the international houses, where you're more likely to have a well-rehearsed ensemble. But on the other hand, even the top opera stars, with many commitments all over the world, are on occasion prepared to settle for a period of time to rehearse thoroughly with their colleagues, especially when there's the attraction of a new production. But then there's perhaps another danger. Isn't it possible that the stars will be inhibited by the demands of the ensemble, that they might be submerged by the production itself? Singers can't give of their best, can they, if, for example, they have to descend great flights of steps wearing impossible headdresses, though these might be just right for the production. But on balance, music critic Alan Blythe doesn't agree.
Actually, I think I would look at it a bit more positively. I think what we've done is thrown up intelligent star singers, i.e. your Janet Baker or your Robert Lloyd, who are willing, while realising their star status, to work within an ensemble and work long hours at getting an opera right. And this seems to me very positive, and you're getting the best of both worlds.
Alan Blythe.
It depends on your director. It depends on the artists. If you have artists that will not cooperate, that will not come to rehearsals, that will not work together to make ensemble, to make a performance, then you'll hear beautiful sounds with rote movements, you know, I love you sort of thing, which means absolutely nothing.
Soprano Martina Arroyo. But she's not critical of all her colleagues, by no means.
If you get people, young people like a Placido Domingo and a Cheryl Mills, who get characterizations that have meaning.
Characterization brings drama into the opera house. It is true that in modern productions, extra demands are sometimes imposed on singers. But the producer can help to create dramatic tension, and he's failed if he doesn't. And the conductor, too. Opening of Verdi's Otello, conducted by Toscanini. It's the conductor who controls the shape of a whole performance, and he, not the singer, who determines the detailed tempo of the opera moment by moment. World-famous singers will, on occasion, yield to a correction from a conductor who may be much younger and less experienced than themselves, and much less celebrated. The conductor can be a friend, holding down the orchestral level to support the singers and helping them get their voice over, or he can drown them out by playing too loudly. Drama in the orchestral pit at the expense of the drama on stage. It's the conductor who holds all the elements together and maintains or fails to maintain the dramatic tension. No one knows better than Placido Domingo the importance of the conductor and just how difficult this job is. Though he'll no doubt be with us many years yet as a singer, he's already starting to conduct as well. So he is one of the very, very few who have both performed on stage and also taken the strain down in the pit.
You have 100 horses on the stage and 100 horses down, you know, and you have to be able to handle like 200 horses wider, you know, and coming from all directions. You feel like a Roman gladiator, you know, really going in two different cars with one foot in a different car, you know, pulled by 100 horses. So it's quite difficult.
Hubbub and general melee on Midsummer Eve in late medieval Nuremberg in Wagner's Meistersinger, conducted not by Domingo, though he is the principal tenor on that recording, but by Eugen Jochum. Not only coordination in ensemble pieces like that shows the hand of the conductor. Throughout, there's also the matter of pacing, of timings, of balance, balancing the various instruments within the orchestra as well as the balance of orchestra with singers. But finally, if you want to hear what difference a conductor can make to the dramatic impact of a piece, listen to the end of Verdi's last opera, Falstaff. First, the more meditative Giulini, and then a faster, more urgent performance from Toscanini, as they each interpret the wonderful fugue about the ultimately comic nature of the universe.
Tutta nel mare bella, l'ome nel burlone, è nato burlone, 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 tutta nel mare bella, l'ome nel burlone, è nato burlone, 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 l'ome nel mare bella, è nato burlone, 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 l'ome nel mare bella, 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 l'ome nel mare bella,